Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 12th of October, Anno Domini 2013, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Michael Oden.
And in 5 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, kick off your shoes, don't get the blues. Our numbers come in twos. It's 585-966-JAZZ, that's 966-5299, or toll-free 1-800-790-0415. And here's the news. So who can look up your Facebook timeline by name? Anyone you haven't blocked. Unfortunately, Facebook is removing that privacy setting, notifying those who have hidden themselves that they will now be searchable. It deleted the option from those who hadn't used it in December and is starting to push everyone to use privacy controls on each type of content they share, but there's no one-click opt-out of Facebook search. To be fair, the who can look up your timeline by name feature was likely misunderstood by a lot of people. At first glance, you might assume it meant that strangers can't find your profile, but that's incorrect. There have been lots of ways to navigate your profile, like clicking your name on a photo you're tagged in, finding your name in a friend's friend list, or combing through likes on a mutual friend's newsfeed post. With the rollout of Graph Search, the avenues for sniffing out someone's profile grew exponentially. Basically, every piece of personal information, and soon the content you post about, could bring you up in search. If you publicly list that you live in San Francisco, a Graph Search of people who live in San Francisco could lead someone to your profile. It also led people to think search was broken in some cases. If I met someone through a Facebook group and wanted to friend them, now that friend is a verb, I might search for them and not be able to find them if they had used this privacy setting. But what's more important, of course, are the safety implications. Keeping this privacy option around gave people a false sense of security. For that reason, it's wise of Facebook to remove it. But it should have provided an even stronger universal privacy control for opting out of search, not a slew of weaker ones. Over the next few months, users who've employed the privacy setting to avoid being searched by name will see a big announcement at the top of their Facebook homepage explaining what's happening. They'll have to confirm that they understand the change before they're put back into name search and the privacy setting disappears from their options. After that, the way people can stay hidden is to manually restrict the visibility of each piece of their profile. And that is a bit of a chore. You'd have to go through every piece of personal information in your About section and set its visibility to friends or only me. At least Facebook provides a quick way to restrict the visibility of all your old newsfeed posts. I've never been quite sure what the visibility of for only me. Is it in case I forget myself one day I can look myself up on Facebook? I don't
understand. Apparently. I don't know. Maybe it's like a reference or something.
Yeah,
so
maybe.
You can like... Oh, but why no?
If it's only for me, why bother putting it in? Never mind. Here's the question of the week, the poll of the week at soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y. Francis would like us to remind you. Will you try to fix your Facebook privacy settings? The choices are, of course, I value my privacy. Maybe I'll look at them. I gave up the illusion of Facebook privacy. And face what now? So far, we have 32 votes. Most of you are saying face what now, and a couple are saying I gave up the illusion of Facebook privacy. Here's the deal, however. You'll have more to say on this subject. I know you will. So you can check out our forums. If you go down on the far right-hand column to Fascinating Stuff, the top one is about the fora. And you'll find a forum that says, 12 October 13, will you try to fix your Facebook privacy settings? And when you're done with all of that, give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415. Now, this week, that number is strictly for getting your questions answered. Next week, of course, we'll be sharing that number with the annual pledge drive. So start saving your pennies and folding money too. How many remember that? And folding money, too, in order to join us in the pledge. But that's not until next week, so you don't have to feel embarrassed to not be a member this week.
I actually this week saw an interesting show. There's a British show called Bang Goes the Theory on science and culture and technology. And they did one on psychology. And they went to they talked about a company that collects donations, you know, the cans that donate a penny and help the kids or whatever at cash registers and whatnot. You know, put your loose change in. And they had two cans. One had a big sign, "Every penny counts." And one had a big sign that said, "Every pound counts," because it was England. And they figured that the ones that said "every pound counts," people would put more pounds in. It turns out that the one that said "penny" got eight times more money than the one that said "pound," because people don't think of pennies as being real money.
Right.
So, yeah, I'll throw my change in there, but a pound,
That's real money.
Right, yeah, same thing here in America. I'll put some pennies in, my loose change, but a whole dollar? No.
Well, yes, and that's the way, at places like McDonald's, you get that tray underneath for the Ronald McDonald House. They say a lot of people will you get $2.48. You throw the change in.
Right.
It's only 48 cents. It's
insignificant.
Coins. It's nothing. But, you know, if you eat there more often than you should, that ends up being real money.
Yep. And it probably adds up to lots of money for them every year.
Lots of money. And that's good. I got nothing but praise for the Ronald McDonald House, so I'm not saying no. But it's interesting that Facebook, of course, on the other hand, Mark Zuckerberg, the man who owns Facebook, just spent, $1 billion or some silly thing, buying all the houses around him so he would have more privacy.
If that's not paranoia, I don't know what is.
Well, right. And he's actually said he wouldn't want his information out there. And so, yeah, it's
so he wants. So he
there.
Wants tons of privacy to
For
the point
him.
Of buying every house in his neighborhood, but yet he doesn't want to give anybody else privacy. I wonder where the...
Right.
Yeah where the
exactly.
disconnect is there, yeah.
And, of course, Google Plus now is... has a thing coming up where if you plus one something, you know, many websites have a plus one feature where, you know, you can either retweet something or whatever that is. And
it's getting
and also
to be more and more
it.
And more of those as more social networks come online. Like, went to some website and
I thought about putting it on here.
Right, yeah, for a day or two there was like 30 of them up there. For
right.
You can pin it,
and
you can tweet it, you
yeah,
can
right.
circle it, you can friend it. You can.
Well, and people do that, and that's important these days because it's through social networks that we would find new listeners.
Yep.
But I took it off because it was just annoying me. But I'll put it back at some point. The big thing, however, is Google Plus now. If you plus one something somewhere, you may see that in an ad on a Google search.
Yep.
Nick Francesco plus, you know, you search for, I don't know, boats. Nick Francesco plus one Chris Craft. You can, but however, on Google, if you go to your profile, you can opt out of that ever happening with one click.
Yep.
You know, so while they're certainly doing it, if you want to opt out of it, just go to your profile. You got to find the spot, and I don't have it in my head right now, but we'll find some information.
I posted a link to a Mashable article about this, and they gave instructions on how to fix. In fact, the title is "How to Fix the Latest Facebook Privacy Mess" or something like that.
Right. Well, there's all yeah, right, and there's also one for Google as well. So, they're both obviously, you know, if you go to a website and plus one something, that's kind of public. That's the whole point.
Right.
So they will bring it up among your friends when you get a search result. That's sort of legit, but you can opt out of it, which makes it really legit. This Facebook thing, to opt out of it, you've got to go through a million hoops, and I don't think that's a good idea. I just don't think it's fair.
I was just listening to a Security Now episode this week again. I get a lot of my news from Security Now.
Yeah.
There were four companies they were talking about that their data. What did you call them? They collect data.
Yeah.
And they collect real world data. You know, surveys you fill out, you know, Shoppers Club coupons and things like that. And advertisers go to them and say, give us a list, online list of all the people interested in buying a new family car. And these companies go to Facebook and say, okay, here's a bunch of email addresses we have. Tell me, do you have the same email address? And give me those addresses. And Facebook says, okay.
Sure they do. Because they get paid for that.
Right. And so what...
Nobody gives anything.
The implication...
They sell it.
The implication there was astounding, that real world identity tracking is now merging with electronic identity tracking.
Right.
And things that you didn't think would be trackable are. And then the fourth company they talked about is also an advertiser themselves. So they put a tracking cookie on your website. So they can track, oh, you went to a grocery store website, and you also use this physical grocery store Shoppers Club card, and we know that was the same person. And
right.
So now you're going to get more ads.
Right. And
that was the theory in the beginning. You will get ads of interest to you.
Right.
But we see that, both you and I see that Christmas time with Amazon. I buy a bunch of crap for my wife, and I get ads for crap I'm not interested in.
Right.
Those
are
gifts. So there should be a box on there that this is a gift. Don't put this in my profile.
right. Also, I lost the train of thought that I had in my head about this. It doesn't matter. It couldn't have been that important if I was doing it. But one other thing that they do, all these places that, we're giving away an iPad mini, we're giving away this, we're giving away that. They're not doing that out of the goodness of their heart. They're not doing it because they love you. They're doing it because in return they get your email addresses for what's an iPad mini cost?
$329.
They get 50,000 email addresses, which they then sell at a penny apiece. That's good money. That's a good return on your investment. You could give away an entire iPad, you could give away an entire MacBook Pro and still make a metric buttload of money.
And Apple actually has rules about giving away their products and raffling their products. It's against their terms of service.
Yeah.
But these companies don't care. Yeah.
They don't care.
But those of us that, so we at Apple Cider, we have a New York State raffle license because we had to get a license to have raffles.
Right.
So we're trying to follow the rules, and it's interesting what we can and cannot raffle off based on the rules of the company that the product we want.
Right.
Crazy.
Oh, and here's the other thing we see all the time. You see this on Facebook constantly. What's your mafia name? The first name is your birth month. Your middle name is your birthday. And the last year is the color of your shirt. The last name is the color of your shirt. Well, they don't care about the color of your shirt. But when you say, hey, I'm, I don't know, Vito Corleone, you've just given them your birthday. You've just told the world when your birthday is, and what's one of the things that thieves need to be able to steal your identity?
Your
birthday.
Your birth.
So we see that all the time, and a million people are passing those around on Facebook because they think it's cool and funny. They're not. Obviously, the people who are passing it on are your relatives, and they just think it's funny.
Yep.
Nobody thinks of the security implications that you're announcing your birthday to the world. And, of course, it's not your birth year, so everybody thinks, well, they don't really know how old I am. That's not what's important.
Yep. This reminds me a lot of what we used to talk about with kids' safety. Back in, you know, 5 years ago, the early days of social networking, some kid, you know, says, oh, I had a horrible test in Mrs., you know, Frederick's, you know, third period English class. Okay, now I can look at school rosters and find out an English teacher, and okay, now I know who that person is now.
Yep.
And it's what is apparently innocuous information is so easy to find online now, you used to have to look through public records in courthouses and whatnot.
So excited, just booked my cruise, can't wait for January.
All right.
Thank you, now I know when you're not home.
And I can come steal all your stuff. And then I'll be back in a month because your insurance just let you get better new stuff.
Yeah, right.
In fact, there's an insurance commercial now running where the thieves are going through the house and the insurance company is one room behind replacing everything with
like
better stuff.
Did that commercial there where they're like, yeah.
Yeah, so you're getting better stuff, and all right, so the second group of thieves can come through and steal the better stuff.
That's right. Come back the next night, get better stuff.
Yep.
The problem is, and I've said this 100 times, we're sitting in our homes. We feel safe because we are home.
Yep.
And so we don't think about this stuff in quite the same way that we do when we're out in the world. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Steve Ray, Michael Oden, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 20 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. We are Soundbites, and we are right here on the truly great and truly member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Michael Oden.
And at 25 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Dennis from Rochester on the line. Welcome, Dennis. What's up?
Hi, guys. By the way, you had an open mic during your promos. Just
uh-oh.
So oops.
Just thought I'd let you know.
Sorry about that.
I've got a friend who's got an iPhone 4S, and I know you guys probably talked about this before, but I don't have an iPhone, so I wasn't paying a lot of attention. But she downloaded the latest OS, maybe OS 7.
Yeah,
right, iOS 7.
And she says she's had nothing but trouble, and she doesn't know what to do. What should I tell her? Can she go back to her previous OS?
If she still has a copy in her computer, there are ways to downgrade the OS, but it's tricky. One of the things Apple is notorious for is when the new OS comes out, they stop making the old one available for download.
Oh.
So if she happens to have a copy still in her computer from the previous download, she can do that. And there are places around the internet where you can find previous OS versions. One thing she might want to try is in the iBook store, there is a free book on iOS 7. There were enough significant changes to the look and operation of iOS 7 that a lot of people were having trouble learning the new way of doing things.
Mm-hmm.
And so having a manual or a book to read through, we're seeing a lot of people be helped by.
And that was the iBook store?
Yeah, there's the iBook app on the device where you can buy books and read books.
Okay.
And so Apple's iBook store is in there. And if you just search for iPhone User's Guide, you'll find the free User's Guide for iOS 7. You'll probably find User's Guides for previous OSs too. Make sure it's the free one from Apple. There are other companies selling other books, both free and pay. But usually it's best to start with the Apple one before you start looking at third parties.
Okay. So if she has the previous OS... Was OS 6 then, maybe? I mean,
yeah, 6.1.3, I think, was the last version of OS 6.
And she would, is there any special instructions in terms of how to get OS 6.1.3 back on her phone? Can she?
You have to find a website that still has it, that you can trust. And then there's a sort of a hidden procedure to downgrade an OS on the phone.
In the phone, there's a feature to downgrade.
It's on the computer. You have to use your computer to downgrade it.
Okay, on PC. Okay, I'm writing this down as I'm talking to you.
If you Google around, let me see if I can find a reputable link. for downgrading the OS. Apple hasn't made it easy, but it is possible.
Okay.
But we don't have to wait for that.
He'll just post it. Put it as one of your links for today's show. That would be great.
That's what we'll do.
Yep.
Thank you.
Thanks. Yeah, a lot of people have been...
Something happens in the Android world, in the Linux world. You load the new update, and, oh, crap, I hate that. And,
right, right. At least in the Android world, they keep the old one around, which would have been smart, honestly, for Apple to do.
Well, Apple knows what's best for us.
Of course it does, citizen. I'm a big fan of being able to downgrade, of being able to do what you want. And of course, you can also mod the entire system with something like Cyanogen.
Mm-hmm.
So you can turn the whole thing into something else entirely if you want. I know people who've turned their tablets into Linux boxes. Slow.
Yeah, I took my wife's Nook tablet and ran Cyanogen on it and loaded Jelly Bean to turn it into a pure Android tablet.
It's nice, isn't it?
Yeah, except she can't get her Nook credits.
Really?
Well, the Nook store has them, but the credits she has in other Nook apps aren't available on the Android app. So the Nook credits are only from Barnes & Noble. The Android credits are only for Google. So it's like the Apple credits. If you have an iTunes gift card, it's only in iTunes.
But I would think if you signed on with the same username and password, you would get your credits.
Right. And
apparently you don't.
Apparently not. No.
Oh, interesting. Not good, but certainly interesting. Smiley over in the Hangout, Google Hangout, Smiley says, make use of .com/pages/download may have something. Many free PDFs there. I think he's talking about the Apple downgrade.
Oh, free PDFs. It may even be the manual.
Yeah. So that's nice. Yeah, there's all kinds of interesting stuff. We have someone else on the line. Is that what's... No, we haven't. Okay, in that case, I'm going to read this great piece of news, which I actually discovered after I sent you the news. It's been a long time since we've seen the dreaded blue screen of death, but it's back, and in the unlikeliest of places. Oddly enough, some Apple iPhone 5S owners are reporting blue screen of death errors, though they're a little different from the ones you may remember seeing on Windows desktops. Rather than spit out an obscure error code with a generic description, some iPhone 5S devices are suddenly turning blue before automatically restarting. The Numbers app and Apple's iWork suite, a free program with new iPhones, seems to be the primary cause, though blue screen of death behavior has also been observed in other applications, according to complaints in Apple support forum. You can find demonstrations of the error posted all over YouTube. Based on when the support threads were first posted, this appears to be a problem that's been going on since the iPhone 5S launch last month, though it's just now gaining attention. Apple hasn't acknowledged the problem, so it's unclear when a fix may be in sight. Some users say disabling iCloud syncing to the iWork suite seems to work for some, though not for every user. So, are you nostalgic for the blue screen of death? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. And, of course, Windows people are gloating. The fact that it's blue.
Yeah, why did Apple pick blue?
Well, I don't know that Apple picked it. It's just what it comes up as, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, blue is the standard color that everybody uses because it's the color that's easiest to produce and cleanest to produce on an LED.
An RGB monitor. Right, it can be red or green or blue.
And they pick blue.
Yeah.
So I get it that it's blue, but sadly it's blue, so the Windows people are all going, ha-ha. Yeah.
We have had the spinning beach ball of death. That's the Apple Weight cursor is a round, multicolored ball that spins around at you. And so that's been sort of been nicknamed the beach ball of death. And it's tough. It's the wait cursor. It means wait, I'm busy doing something. How long do you wait before you give up and say the computer's crashed versus it's just busy doing something?
Yep.
And I've even seen cases where, because of the multitasking on the Mac and on Windows, the program you're in is giving you the beach ball. But if you click on another program, that one works fine. And so in the Apple world, there's a force quit command. You know, in Windows, you have Control-Alt-Delete to bring up your task manager. On the Mac, it's Command-Option-Escape. And it brings up your task manager, and you can force a stuck program to quit. and hopefully it's not the entire system.
Right. That's although all operating systems, Windows, Mac, Linux, are all getting better about sandboxing things. That is to say, each thing runs in its own little area. So this one thing locking up doesn't kill this other thing or this other thing. Even though they're getting better at sandboxing, doesn't always work because sometimes what gets it gets stuck during a time when it's told the operating system, hey, I need to do something.
Yep.
And the operating system says, go ahead, and it never does.
Yeah.
And that can lock up everything. Chrome has been doing it for a while now, and other browsers are doing the same thing. They're sandboxing every tab so that if you lock up one tab, it doesn't lock up the other tabs, usually.
And some of that is also for the plugins like Flash and Java, that if you get an exploit in one tab, it can't cross your tabs and infect other sites.
Never cross the tabs.
Never cross the tabs, yeah.
Exactly. It is so sad that it's blue, but that's what's happening. And if you're getting that blue screen of death on your iPhone, give it a couple of days. I'm sure Apple is diligently working on a fix.
There's also an issue we've seen with some people. Apple says it's a small fraction of a percent, but of course my boss has the problem, where Apple has their iMessage program that sends messages to other Apple devices through the internet without using your texting plan. And that same iMessage app will either send a straight SMS or it will send an iMessage. And for some people, SMSs are not going through, but iMessages are. And sometimes it's the other way around. And your phone doesn't know it wasn't delivered. Because sometimes, normally what happens is you send a message in the iMessage program. You get a delivered message. So the other end tells, I got it, and it comes back to your end. So when you send a text message on your phone, there's no guarantee that it was ever delivered. And the only way you know it was delivered is if they reply to it.
Right.
So with this bug, you don't know the message was not delivered until someone complains that you didn't answer their question or you didn't call them back like they wanted. So there's been a few fixes, temporary fixes published, turn your messaging on and off again, reboot the phone. Apple says there'll be an update coming to fix it. We did get the 7.02 patch a week or so ago, I think it was, and that fixed the lock screen bug that we talked about a couple of weeks ago. And I'm wondering if they pushed that update out because that lock screen bug was pretty significant before they fixed the iMessage bug.
Right.
But we were talking about that lock screen bug. With the right contortions of swipes and pushes and taps, you could get into a locked phone and make phone calls. And part of that is an FCC requirement that even when a phone is locked, you must be able to make a 911 call.
Right.
So there's a hole to make 911 calls.
Right.
And where there's a hole, someone will find an exploit.
Right. I had, before we do that, Joe in the Hangout is saying, have you heard about people having motion sickness symptoms while using iOS 7? Yeah, but that's been for years on all kinds of devices.
And the big thing now is iOS 7 has a feature called Parallax with different layers. So when you turn the phone, the icons in the front are in a different layer than the background pattern, and so it gives it a sort of pseudo three-dimensional look. And some people are very susceptible to that. So you can go into your phone settings and turn off those three-dimensional... let me leave the Hangout a minute in here, and I can... see what that setting is. You can turn off that three-dimensional wallpaper and go back to the regular two-dimension. If I can find, here it is, wallpaper. What do they call it here? You have two-dimensional wallpaper and you have three-dimensional wallpaper. Oh, dynamic and still. So dynamic wallpaper moves in the background, and as you move your phone around, there's an accelerometer, it knows what you're looking at and what direction you're looking at it. And so it's kind of a neat effect. Unless it makes you sick.
But people have been experiencing motion sickness in games for 100 years. I'm one. If I play games for too long a time, sometimes as long as a minute, depending on the game, I start to get a little nauseous.
A lot of people have that problem in 3D movies. The glasses give them a headache. The game doesn't work right. Oh, speaking of old games, Dragon's Lair just was released for iPad.
Nice.
The original Dragon's Lair with upgraded graphics. So it was one of the first games that used a laser disc, and some of them even had a 3D projection built in, and just spent hours and hours playing that game.
Nice.
All those nostalgic games people are now re-releasing for tablets, because the tablets of today have as much power as computers from 20 years ago.
Right.
Or more.
One of the things that I'm seeing people talking about a lot right now is a product called Talkatone.
Yep.
Which is a program that works with Google Voice to give you phone calls and SMS messages. So what they do is they either, like I did with my iPod, where you just turn off the phone part,
yep,
right? And now you have a device that is Wi-Fi only. Put Talkatone on it, and you can now make phone calls and text messages as long as you're in Wi-Fi. And for those times when you're away from Wi-Fi, because of the hole you just talked about,
yep,
you can always make 911 calls. So they're buying very inexpensive phones and not having big costs.
Or even iPads.
Or even iPads will do it. Okay, we're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes. Steve Ray, Michael Oden, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 40 minutes after the hour, Soundbites, member-supported, Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Michael Oden.
And 44 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbite.
I was waiting for Dave there for a second.
Yeah, you were. In the Hangouts again, Joe says, SMS is kind of like UDP.
Yeah.
I would tell you a UDP joke, but you might not get it. Ba-dum-bum. Thank you. I'll be here all week. Try the veal. All right. Back to the news. Tip your waitstaff. Releasing an overpriced iPhone. Remember we talked a couple weeks ago about the iPhone 5C, and I said I didn't think it was actually going to sell in China because it was overpriced for them.
Yeah.
We get subsidies here. They don't. So it's a $700 phone over there.
Yeah.
And they were making this 5C specifically as the cheaper alternative for Asia.
It's only $600.
Right. Well, releasing an overpriced iPhone 5C looks like a disaster waiting to happen. Looked like a disaster waiting to happen. And a recent report seems to indicate just how much damage this misstep has caused. Insider C Technology reports that Apple has decreased average daily production of the iPhone 5C from 300,000 to 150,000 units. Ooh. Although those figures seem a bit odd, just in general, as sales continue to plummet and gray market prices drop to meet the meager demand. Gray market traders buy iPhones all over the world for subsidized prices, then smuggle them back to China to sell at a slightly lower price than official retailers and wireless carriers. Typically, the gray market price for a popular product would only amount to limited savings, but the iPhone 5C is currently available for a 30% or more discount through less than legal channels. C Technology points out that Apple's price for the iPhone 5C is 4,488 yuan, which is 727 US dollars. But on China's popular online market, Taobao, prices are as low as 3,000 yuan, which is only 490 US dollars. iPhone 5S sales have remained consistent, but reports like these are signs that the 5C might have been a failed experiment in China. So, would you buy an iPhone 5C for $727 or even for $490? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415.
That's a very strange decrease in production there. I wouldn't think that just because it failed there, they would drop it that many.
Well, yes, that bothers me. It also bothers me the number 300,000 a day.
Yeah.
Maybe a week, certainly a month, but a day? I'm just thinking that somebody at C Insider fumble-fingered something somewhere.
Opening weekend, they sold 3 million units a day of all the iPhone 5s, the C and the S.
Right. But so maybe it is. It strikes me
it's
as a
huge number. Yeah.
It's huge number.
One of the things that we usually see is there's affluent people in parts of China, especially in Hong Kong and Shanghai. And it's been a big thing for a long time about people lining up at the Apple stores in the U.S., buying phones. And Apple stores tried to limit this, where you can't pay cash, and that backfired on them. You know, a nice little lady wanted to pay cash for her phone. You can only buy two phones at a time to give everyone a chance, because people were being paid to wait in line.
Yep.
Get two phones, and then go back to the phone pimp, and then the guy would smuggle these phones into Hong Kong and sell them for $1,000. So they were selling them for more than retail, because these affluent people, where the phones are not available from Apple, are paying, you know, double or triple retail to get this hot new product, which is ironic because they're made in Shenzhen, China, so. So, but China's a huge, you know, it's like something's made in New York. You know, I can fly to New York to get one, or I can pay some guy $1,000 to get one for me.
Right. I used to get this all the time when I lived in Michigan, in particular, for some reason. You live in New York State? Yeah, I'm from Rochester, New York. Do you know my friend Jerry? He lives in New York City.
Yep.
Yeah, you know, I look across my back fence and there he is.
When I used to go, my father's side of the family, they all live in Kentucky.
Uh-huh.
So we used to go down there back when I was little, like once a year, and we would talk about New York, and they'd be like, "Oh yeah, we got those Twin Towers up there, don't you?" I'm like, "No, no, no.
Yeah.
We have an empty city, Lake Ontario, and a river. That's basically what we have."
Yeah.
Oh, so you got them those Knicks, do you? I'm like, no, we don't.
To the rest of the country, whenever you say New York, they mean New York City.
They mean New York City. I lived in New York City for many, many years and loved it, but it isn't the end-all and be-all of New York State.
What's interesting is we consider ourselves upstate New York, because downstate is Binghamton.
Right.
But when you're in New York City, upstate is Albany.
upstate is White Plains.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yep.
That's true. I had a friend who said, "Oh, yeah, I live upstate New York." She said, "Me too. I'm in White Plains. Where are you?" I said, "I'm in real upstate."
Yep.
I'm in, and of course, people in Watertown don't think we're upstate.
Yep. Well, like, I always like watching Law and Order in out of New York City, and they'd drive to Attica to interview a suspect. Two or three times in one day.
Yes.
They don't realize that's a 6-hour drive.
I want that car.
Yeah. It's like the Men in Black car.
You all right? Okay, we're going to take a short break while Steve dies here in the corner. Let me turn off his hangout so we don't see that happen on air. Yeah, it's an interesting issue, because I've talked about two things that seem to be coming true. One is that the gold iPhone is going to outsell all the other iPhones, because if you don't get the gold one, how do you know it's a new one? So everybody who's buying it for prestige is going to get the gold one.
I know people that always get the latest thing, and they're waiting for the gold one, and you know, 2 or 3 week wait still.
Right, because that's the one that's popular.
Yep.
And that 5C just isn't going to be as popular overseas as they want it to be, because it's too expensive. When you can buy a phone, a full-featured Android phone, for $120 retail, there aren't going to be that many people who will say, "Well, what the hell, it's three times more expensive, but it's worth it."
Mm-hmm.
They're just not going to be that many, or four times more expensive. There just aren't going to be that many. So it's a good gamble on Apple's part. It's good that they see that they need to have a lower end phone. The 5C is not it. It's that simple. The 5C is not it.
And in some of the emerging countries, their smartphone is the only computer they have.
Right.
Because they basically can't afford anything more than that. So smartphone popularity is huge. You know, there are very few feature phones. And so that's where, you know, companies like HTC and Samsung are making a killing with their $100 phones. $100, no subsidy.
Right. All right, back to the phones. Henry from Rochester, New York. What's up, Henry?
Oh, yes. Good morning, gentlemen. I have a question for you about Firefox.
Yes.
the basics. I'm running Windows Home Edition XP up to Service Pack 3, fully up to date. And I'm running Firefox version 24.0. Now, this problem I've had for the last few months, since I think it happened whenever either this version or maybe a slightly earlier version happened. Before, whenever I pull up a number of websites, they'd fill up the screen, and they from side to side, you know, the whole website would appear. But with the newest version of Firefox, the websites seem to have blown up a little bit. So now that I've got to scroll from side to side, I haven't changed anything.
Yeah, you did.
Without knowing it.
Well, with a changed Firefox. Yeah. And I'm wondering, is there something, and I've been trying within the Firefox settings to go and change fonts and all this stuff, but nothing seems to help.
Pull down the view menu. And okay. Select Zoom, and I'll bet you have zoomed in. So if you just hit Control and Zero, it should go back to the real size.
And that's the size the other end sets. So the website itself sets how big the page looks. And what we've run into is so many people have widescreen computers now. When you make your window as wide as the screen, the website is too small. Because websites are still set for square screens, basically.
Well, I have a standard screen. I don't have a widescreen.
And so people are zooming in on the text, and then if you zoom in too far, you end up having to scroll left or right.
Okay.
Firefox also has a command to zoom text only. So when you zoom, it will zoom text and graphics, or you can zoom just the text. If you zoom in too far, everything gets jumbled and overlapped on itself, and it doesn't work very well.
Okay.
The other browsers have similar commands also.
Okay, I will try that. I hadn't thought about that. I've been playing around with the fonts and whether I used the website's fonts or the default fonts. That didn't seem to make any difference. Okay,
right.
I will try that, gentlemen.
There you go.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
We see.
Bye-bye.
Yep. We also see a lot of older people will lower the resolution of their screen. So everything on screen gets bigger.
Right.
But that lowering the resolution makes it fuzzier. So it's usually better to leave the resolution the way it is and make the text bigger, because then the text stays sharp.
Right.
And so in your browser, Safari, Firefox, probably IE. I don't use IE. and Chrome, there's the zoom commands where you can zoom in. And if you zoom too far, then it looks too big. And you have to scroll side to side. But it's really sharp text.
Yeah.
Except the Firefox logo. Their logo.
Well, the logo is a picture. And if you get too,
yeah,
get too
get
high,
too
you'll see the pixelation. But the text is text.
Yeah.
That's why a lot of people nowadays are using Google Web fonts.
Yeah.
Because no matter what size you put them at, they still look pretty good. And Joe in the Hangout says, Control KP plus, Control KP minus. And Control Zero, that zoom to 100%.
Yeah, on the Mac, it's Command Plus, Command Minus, let's try Command Zero. I am at 100%, so that didn't work. Yeah, so Command Plus makes it bigger, Command Zero makes it actual size, Command Minus makes it smaller.
Right. So, yeah, you can do that. That's real nice because every once in a while, keypad. I see Control Keypad Plus, Control Keypad Minus. I see. There you go. Control plus, Control minus, and Control zero. But you have to use the keypad, he says, to do that. But I think it works on the actual keyboard itself as well.
Well, you've got a laptop without a keypad.
Right. So let me go back
You've got those inner function keys.
I have the inner function keys.
Apple used to have that inner keypad on their keyboards where you hold down the function key or a numlock key, and it turns your keyboard into numbers.
Right.
They don't do that anymore. Because apparently they got so many tech calls saying, my computer doesn't type letters anymore. Do you see the green light that says numlock on? Yeah. Well, that means your number lock is on and you can't type letters.
And it does say numlock, not nuts, but that's a whole other story. Anyway, I don't see that much anymore either. This is an old laptop.
Yeah,
I've talked about that before. It's a very old laptop, and that's why I'm not doing.
Well, because computers were originally
IRC chat anymore.
Yeah, computers were originally used for spreadsheets and numbers. You know, VisiCalc, the first killer app, and so you that 10-key keypad was really really handy for people putting numbers in.
When I started selling computers, there was a lot of hobbyists buying stuff. Then the Apple II came out, and a few hobbyists bought it. Then VisiCalc came out, and
everybody
wanted it. Everybody wanted it. And then, of course, when Lotus 1-2-3 came out on the IBM PC, well, then you know nobody ever got fired buying IBM back in the day. So we sold an awful lot of those, but it was all about spreadsheets. In fact, I used to get people come to me and say, I can't, my computer budget, schools will come and say, my computer budget is used up, but I need more computers and I've got a lot of money in my support thing. What do I do? And I say, well, I can sell you parts and I can package them up nicely for you. So I would do that. But in addition, I would have... people would say the same about IBM PCs. So I would sell them things like calculation devices, spreadsheet things. We're going to take a break. Back in just a few minutes with Steve Ray, Michael Oden, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 59 minutes after the hour, and we are Soundbites. Don't forget, you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. You've wasted an hour of your life with this, but you get to do it all again on the other side of all this great news and weather and all this other interesting information that we're about to present to you. And then we'll come back and talk about more news and talk with more of you and have a little more insanity on the longest running computer show, Soundbites, on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Michael Oden.
And in 4 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. The Google Nexus 5 and Android 4.4 KitKat are less than a week away, according to new rumors. Oh, I'm so excited. Word on the street is that the new phone and the next Android update explode onto the scene together on the 15th of October, which is next Tuesday. I don't know how to put that best. That date comes from whispers around the campfire at Google Launchpad, a fortnight-long event run by Google to help startups to develop their business. At the event, developers have been served Key Lime Pie, which was the planned name for the next update, and KitKat Bars, which lent their name to the update at the last minute. The new 5-inch Nexus smartphone will be revealed by Google very soon, but the actual release date when you can buy the thing remains to be seen. The price is rumored to be south of £250 in Europe, which would be just shy of $400, but the final price tag, again, is yet to be confirmed. The current Google Nexus 4 has sold out, meaning the new Nexus 5 will hopefully take its place soon. So are you excited by KitKat and the Nexus 5? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. I'm personally very excited about KitKat. It's supposed to have lots of nice features and improvements and stuff. It may not help. I may end up in the same... and the same spot that many iPhone 4S users are under. The phone I have may be a little underpowered to run KitKat, but it'll work great on my tablet. It'll work, so that'll be nice.
That's been a common complaint from Apple, who sets older limits. You know, iOS 7 will not run on an iPhone 3GS. And people complain. But if they let it run and it was too slow, people complain.
Right.
So they're screwed.
And it's
ways.
Apple's fault, by the way, just so you know.
Yep.
It's not their fault for doing what Apple told them not to do.
Right.
It's Apple's fault.
Yeah.
All right. Our next caller is Bill from Greece, New York. Welcome, Bill. What's up?
I'm having trouble with my computer, of course. Is when I go from start to documents and I try to open up a new folder.
Wait, let's start with your operating system.
7.
Okay. And now you go to?
Start, documents, new folder. And I don't get a new folder.
Okay. What do you get instead?
Nothing.
Do you have a documents window open at the time?
Yes.
Try the new folder command from the file menu and see if that makes the new folder.
Well, this used to work.
Right. Do you have other windows open on the screen?
Sometimes, yes.
And if you don't have them, you still don't see anything?
Right.
I wonder if it's making the new folder in the wrong window.
Well, that's what I was thinking. If it's making a new folder, like on the desktop, or where do you want this new folder?
In the document I'm in.
You can't put a folder in a document.
I want to change when I add. Okay.
You can't put a folder in a document. You create a folder at the desktop or in another folder, and then you can either create a document in that folder or you create a document and then save it to that folder.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So that may be the issue there.
I'm a little confused in the thing, obviously.
Well, that's all right. These things have so much power that they get easily confused.
Yeah,
but what you want to do is take it step by step. Documents go into folders, and folders either live at the desktop level or in another folder. So let's say you have a folder already called Documents. If you want another folder inside your Documents folder, then what you do is open the Documents folder, right-click on the white space anywhere in that folder, inside that folder, which is now a window, of course, and you'll see a drop-down menu. One of the choices there is New Folder. Then you can name that new folder. Now, when you create a document and go to save it, you can navigate to that new folder you created, whatever name you gave it, and then put it in that folder.
Okay. I'll give that a try.
Yeah, give it a try. Let us know if it works.
Okay, thank you. Appreciate
thank
it.
You.
Have a good day.
You too.
You can kind of envision your hard drive like a giant filing cabinet, and you've got a bunch of drawers, which are your folders, and in your drawer, you probably have more folders, and in the folder, you have your documents. So and we call that the folder hierarchy.
Right.
Because we like big words.
Because we do. What's interesting is when Google first created Google Docs or Google Drive now, and you could put in documents, they didn't really give you folders of any sort.
Right.
They gave you tags, so you could tag documents, but they weren't folders. The point being, what does Google do best? Search.
Yep.
So you want to find an old document, you just do a search.
Yeah.
People don't think that way. So eventually now they're kind of faking folders with tags. You tag a document and it looks like it created a folder for it.
Yep. There were similar issues in the Mac community for a while. Apple added a feature called Spotlight in 10.4, which was a system-wide search. And it was supposed to be so fast that several commentators said you don't need to make folders anymore because if you want to find your document, just you start typing a search and it finds it for you. Doesn't really work that way.
Right.
Part of the problem is with a Unix-based operating system, you probably have a million files in your system folder.
If you could do what Google did, which is their search is limited to your drive, so it's only the documents
right.
you created, it's much faster.
Yep. If you can limit your search to
your
just your home
folder whatever.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
Right. That's a different issue. And also, they're not really looking at people like writers or administrative assistants or people like that who have 100,000 documents
yep.
in their systems because they're keeping old documents for whatever reason.
Old versions of documents.
And old versions of documents and everything else. So, and faculty who have, you know, 75 student papers in a folder, and they're keeping that for a couple of years, and the same with the next class and the next class and the next class. So you end up with hundreds of thousands of documents, which is not a problem until you're trying to brute force search them.
Yep. It's been an issue that because the especially on the Mac and even on Windows, the desktop is getting to be so slow because you've got so many folders and so many icons. It's now common to have 10,000 pictures because it's so easy to take pictures with your camera. Everything's getting so slow. So on the Mac side, people are awaiting a new file system called ZFS that's supposed to be super whiz-bang fast. On Windows, we've got NTFS, and on Mac, it's HFS, so we each have different file systems. And there's advantages both ways onto whichever file system you want, but it's very, very hard to change file systems. How long did it take Microsoft to switch from FAT32 to NTFS? Was it Vista where they just forced everyone to NTFS and too bad?
You can use ZFS on Linux as well. I haven't bothered. But it's supposed to be faster. It's supposed to be better. I just haven't bothered because my machine is fast enough for me.
One of the features that's kind of interesting with it, JBOD, just a bunch of disks, you put two hard drives on your computer now and it shows up as two icons. And people get confused by multiple icons sometimes. So with ZFS, you put two hard drives in it. It's just one big icon, and the operating system figures out where you want to put the file.
Right. And that's actually kind of nice.
Yep.
Linux does the same thing with, for example, I can make my home directory is actually a separate drive.
Yep.
So all I do is go to my home directory, and I don't care or even need to know that it's on an entirely other drive.
Yeah. Now, the Mac has the just a bunch of disk feature because of its Unix underpinnings.
Right. Same idea. And that makes it easier to navigate around it. In fact, I can also mount remote drives. So let's say I've got a Mac Mini. I can mount folders from the Mac Mini as if they were folders on my machine, or actually from a completely remote system, one of my systems at work, I mount a drive from there so I can save my documents to my work drive and never have to worry about backing them up or anything like that because they're there.
They're there and backed up there.
Yeah.
Yep.
So those are some nice features. Do we have somebody waiting on the phone? No.
Okay. These are done.
Anyway, those are done. You may erase those. Check them off. Thank you very much. Well done, you. I'll read another news item. There's a rumor out there. This is the Nexus 5 again. See, the minute I start to read a news story, somebody calls in.
Gives him time to answer the phone.
It gives him time to answer the phone. There's a rumor out there about the pricing for the Nexus 5, the LG Nexus 5. Along with a precise launch date, that was one of the things that was not listed in the service manual that leaked over last weekend. So before we talk about the rumored prices, I would like to emphasize, according to the rumor, there will be two different models based on the amount of storage they have. Each model will also have a different capacity battery powering the phone. With that in mind, we are told that the 16-gig LG Nexus 5 will feature a 2,300 milliamp-hour battery and will be priced lock, stock, and barrel for $299, a $300 all-in phone. The 32-gigabyte LG Nexus 5 will be powered by a 3,000 milliamp-hour cell and will be priced at $399. So it's a $400 all-in phone, a $300 all-in phone, $400 all-in phone. The Google Nexus 4 was $299 for 8 gig unlocked when it first launched. 16 gig model was $349, but both of those units carried only a 2100 milliamp hour cell. It's interesting that we will apparently see two different capacity batteries on the LG Nexus 5 depending on the size of the native memory. When the LG Nexus 5 service manual leaked the other day, the net was abuzz with more than a few potential buyers of the phone who were upset that the 23 milliamp hertz cell was rumored to be on board the handset. Now it appears the 32 gig variety will be powered by the larger 3000 milliamp cell, although there's no information as to whether the longer lived battery fits in the 16 gig model. So what do you think of the idea of different batteries at different price points? Give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll free at 1-800-790-0415. Just like Gerd did from Victor, New York. Hiya, Gerd. What's up?
Pretty good. Nothing much. I got a couple of questions. First of all, a comment about your column being on Thursday instead of Saturday.
Yes.
It's kind of a shame because a lot of people just get Saturday and Sunday papers, so they're going to miss out on your column.
Yeah, I understand. Thank you. The DNC made the decision to move all of their business stuff to Thursday.
Yeah.
And so that I'm in the business section because apparently I've been giving you people the business for years.
Yeah. So much for their decision-making.
Yeah.
All right.
Now, my wife tried to get Saturday and Sunday news delivery.
Yeah.
But then Thursday's got coupons. So DNC has a Thursday through Sunday special. And so that's
Thursday
what we
doesn't have coupons.
Was there something in the Thursday? No, Thursday has the weekend.
Yes.
So that's so they have a Thursday through Sunday special.
And Thursday has me now, which should triple at least.
Oh, who reads papers anymore? Shush. No, I read you online. I read you online, and they screwed the online page, too.
Not only do I read your column, I cut them out and send them up north to Plattsburgh. A buddy of mine that's a computer-savvy guy.
The charming town of Plattsburgh on scenic Lake Champlain.
Yeah, you got that right.
I wrote a song about that many years ago. That was the first line. Okay, so what's up, Gerd? What else you got? Thank you for that, by the way.
How many copies did you sell of that song?
One to the city of Plattsburgh, which was the whole point.
Oh, okay. Listen, everybody's trying to push LifeLock from the NRA to, I mean, everybody's trying to push it. What's the pros and cons in that, and what does Norton 360 do, or malware, or any of those other programs? I'll let you go. I'll listen offline.
All right, thanks. First, let me disclaim everything we're about to say.
Okay.
I'm not an expert on LifeLock.
Okay.
But I can tell you that the whole idea of LifeLock is that it is supposed to protect your identity if it is stolen. That is to say, if somebody gets your Social Security number, they can't really do anything with it.
So it's more of a real-world protection.
It's a real-world protection. Now, as to whether or not it works, you can read all the stuff about that as well as I can and make your own decision. I will tell you that the guy who owns LifeLock has had his identity stolen probably 100 times.
Because he runs all those ads. Here's my Social Security number. Steal my identity.
And
okay,
they do.
But then LifeLock theoretically comes along and fixes the problem.
The theory is it comes along and fixes it. Norton 360, all of those things are supposed to protect you from online theft, not necessarily identity theft, but people breaking into your computer. The problem with identity theft online is that you're giving the information away for free. We talked about this at the top of the show. You fill out one of those cute little surveys to find out your mafia name. You've given everybody your birth date. You put information online that says, I'm going on a trip. They know where you go and what you do. You go to the Podunk, Ohio high school reunion. They know what your hometown was. So we give that information away all the time, and it's nothing. None of those are ever going to help you with that. But they will help you with someone trying to break into your computer to steal that information. So there's a distinct difference between LifeLock and the various products that you put on your computer. As Steve said, LifeLock is real world and the analog world, and all those other products are digital.
And in most cases, your banks and your credit card companies have their own fraud protection built in. And you can actually call them and increase the level of protection if you want. So if you make an if there is an uncharacteristic purchase on your credit card, they will ping your cell phone and say, is this really a legitimate sale? So if normally you just, $20, $30 here and there, and suddenly there's a $500 charge, they'll send your cell phone and, is this really you, and allow that message to go through. We see that a lot at our store because people are buying, $1,000 computer packages, and the phone rings and it's Amex or Citibank saying, did you really make this purchase? So you may not have to pay for LifeLock if you don't want to, because your banks should do that for you already.
Well, to that point of,
to that point, credit
card.
LifeLock is one...
is more about identity theft in, in their opening different credit things in your name. Listen, we're going to... If you're on the line, stay on the line. If you're not, get on the line. We're going to take a quick break, back in just a couple of minutes with Sound Bites. Member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Michael Oden.
And at 27 minutes after the hour, we have Bill from Webster on the line. Hiya, Bill. What's up?
Hey, guys. How's it going today?
Peachy, you?
Not too bad. You guys have just redefined commercial-free radio.
Thank you. Thank you.
Hey, I don't know if you're aware of this, but when someone's on hold and listening to the radio station on the phone, when you go to break, you can also hear all the mics. So I'm hearing all your conversations along with the radio.
Oh, that's probably what Gerd meant earlier. We weren't on the air, but the mics were live on hold.
Right.
But all the buttons set off because we checked.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, that's you're getting the best show on
the
air.
The mics
were
on.
Yeah.
There you go. Well, at any rate, I thought you guys probably didn't know this already, but I thought some of your listeners might find it interesting. Recently, I decided to declutter my desktop a little bit, and I bought a wireless keyboard and mouse.
Yeah.
And this week, I had a RAM stick go bad, and I got a blue screen of death. And when the computer restarted, it comes up to that screen where it wants to know whether you want to start normally or go to safe mode, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
And you're supposed to use the up and down arrows to pick what you want and then hit enter. Guess what?
The
wireless keyboard doesn't work when you're outside of Windows.
Yep, it hasn't loaded the driver yet.
Right.
Right. So luckily I had kept my old keyboard and managed to plug it in and remedy the problem, but I just thought I'd pass that information along.
Yeah, keep a USB keyboard around just in case.
Right. The problem, as Steve said, is the wireless keyboard and mouse require a driver, which doesn't load until Windows has loaded. So you can't use it for the recovery screen because Windows hasn't loaded, and therefore the driver hasn't loaded.
Exactly. Or like if you're booting up and you're trying to go to BIOS or whatever. So don't throw the old wired keyboard away.
Exactly. Well thought. Thank you for bringing that to our attention.
Apple.
Okay, hang in there, guys.
Thanks.
Yep.
See you later.
Apple is shipping wireless keyboard and mice in all their iMacs, and so they put a Bluetooth driver in the firmware,
right?
So that you can get keyboard and mouse action before the OS boots. But then they also added a program that when you boot your computer, if it doesn't see a USB device plugged in, it will pop up the Bluetooth setup assistant. Because if there's no USB keyboard or mouse, you must be connecting a wireless one.
Right.
Which is okay until you have one that you forgot to turn on. And then when you turn it on, it adds it as a second one.
Oh,
sometimes.
Yeah.
So that can get frustrating.
Yep.
Or if you have two computers with two wireless keyboards and you pair the wrong one, or even just switch them between. So you're we'll do that as a joke, too. You know, when you grab someone's keyboard and type on their computer.
Yep. All right, back to the phones. It's our friend Joe from Cheektowaga, New York. Hi, Joe. What's up?
You didn't pause that time. Cute. Anyhow.
I said Cheektowaga faster than I usually say cheek.
And I say Towaga.
Yes, exactly.
I was wondering if you've used the face unlock feature for your Nexus 7.
I use it for both my Nexus 7 and my phone.
Well, the one problem I sometimes have is apparently maybe I squint most of the time or something because I use the liveliness check.
Yeah.
And half the time it tells me, sorry, I didn't recognize you.
Yep.
So I have a tip for people that happens to.
Yeah.
It works if you just simply widen your eyes. I mean, like, think of being surprised. And that works well enough. And for those not in the know, the liveliness check, that is so somebody can't take a photograph of you, hold it in front of the camera on the phone or the tablet and say, oh, yeah, go ahead, unlock.
Yeah, what I have found is if I move my head a little. If I hold it still, it thinks I'm a picture. The other thing you can do is once you've set it up with your picture, you can, and I should look on my phone and see what the exact name is, but you can refine your facial image by taking more pictures in different light and at slightly different angles, just very slightly different angles, of your face, so that if it, you don't hold the phone exactly in front of your face, or you know, maybe a little down, maybe a little off to the side, it can still recognize you. So you can refine that image it has of you in memory.
Yeah, so, I know what you're talking about. Yeah. I think they call it enhance.
Yeah, something along that line. So, and that makes it very cool because there some for some reason sitting in my kitchen. I don't know if it's the background because there's a window behind me. I don't know what it is. But in my kitchen, the phone never used to recognize me. Now I've taken three or four shots to enhance in the kitchen. Now it recognizes me.
Oh, yeah. I find any bright light behind you really kills the recognition on that.
No, this is a window into our back hall. We have a very old, we have a very la-di-da house, which I stole. So, basically, it's a dark window, but it's the molding which comes right behind my head and up by my ear usually, and somehow the angular image of all that OG molding, if I pronounce that correctly, confuses the phone until I took those extra pictures.
I think it's just all magic. It's like I can't imagine the processing that goes on to try and do facial recognition.
Well, it used to be that you needed supercomputers to do that. And now you can do it with your phone. It kind of amazes me. You're absolutely right. It's the exponential growth in speed and processing power of phones has made what not that many years ago took a giant supercomputer.
Moore's Law.
Yeah, exactly. Now they do it on the fly with your phone. It's pretty cool. Yeah, right. But I like Face Unlock.
Thank you very much for your time.
Thanks, Joe.
It's kind of like the fingerprint reader that Apple has on the 5S now. It has to be also capacitive and also blood flow.
Right.
Because there's a... it's not a thermal sensor. There's another sensor in there that looks through your skin. So the movie trick of cutting someone's finger off to use the fingerprint scanner won't work very long.
Right. Very long or at all.
Very long, yeah. But there's been several blogs that have claimed to have cracked the Apple fingerprint reader. And it takes 45 minutes of uninterrupted access and a super high-resolution printer with the right kind of three-dimensional toner. Or you just ask the guy what his password is.
Yeah, right. And most people, as we have found out, will give up their password for chocolate.
Yeah. Oh, is that the new phone? Let me see it. Oh, what's your password? Oh, this is cool. Thanks.
Yep, exactly. Exactly. Because people want to show off their new technology.
Yeah.
I always say, you want to see this? I'll unlock it for you. Here. That's...
Yep. Yeah. Well, then there was a guy that could tell... It was a research paper about the fingerprint pattern when you're typing your four-digit PIN in.
Yeah.
That they can tell what your PIN is by the fingerprint patterns.
Yes. Yes, they can. Yep. And again, I don't see anybody using this now. But if they made that, because on the Android, you can make that more than four digits.
Yeah, you can on the Apple, too.
Right. Now
with four digits, that's only 10,000 combinations.
Exactly.
Give me a couple hours, I'll type them all in.
Exactly. So if you have the ability... Right. If you make it seven or eight digits, now what comes into play is the uniqueness of how you type.
Yep.
They can tell who's typing on a keyboard by the unique way that the pressure happens on various keys, and on a screen at the angle at which you type,
yep,
because most of them don't have pressure sensitivity, and the speed with which you go from one number to the next, and maybe not so fast to the next, and
yeah,
whatever.
There was a paper I read about, probably on Security Now, about a new type of password technology that isn't a password. It isn't something you know. It's sort of a kinesthetic ability. They ask you to play a game, and your patterns are unique to you. And so you don't even know yourself the password you're creating, so no one can torture it out of you. But then when you need to go back into that site, you play this. That was the problem. You have to play the game again for several minutes to prove it's you again.
Right.
So it's not for convenient access.
Well, right, and that's the problem. The problem is between security and convenience.
Yep.
You know, so many of us don't put any kind of lock on our phones because we want to get to our phones. On the other hand, your entire life is in your phone. All your phone numbers.
Yep.
Many people keep their secret information on the phone. Pictures that you really don't necessarily want the rest of the world to know you've got are on your phone. And so if you don't lock your phone, I tell people this all the time, particularly when we're talking about security in meetings. I say, if you've got my number in your phone, you either lock it or you get rid of my number. Because I don't want my number getting out there in public.
Yep. Yeah, iOS 7, during the first setup, when you install it, it wants you to put a passcode in.
Right.
There's a little tiny link that says not now, but
right.
They really want you to put a code in. But more and more people are finding it's obtrusive. So, but what they did is that there's a neat feature that you put your code in, and then when the device goes to sleep, you can say, don't ask for the code again for a minute or five or whatever after it sleeps. Because, like, my iPad just went to sleep. So if I have to hit the button, I'd have to type the code again, and that's the annoyance. So, all right, wait a minute or two, and then ask me the code again.
Right.
But that means there's a minute or two opportunity for someone to get into my device.
That's exactly right. It's a dichotomy. It's an issue between the two. There's a push-pull kind of thing that goes on, and this has been the problem with security forever, the difference between convenience and security. Many of us fall on the security side. Many other people fall on the convenience side. But
when I was a kid, we never locked our doors, so we didn't have to worry about it.
That's exactly right. I don't think I had a key to my house till I went off to college.
Yeah.
Because we never
your parents gave
doors.
You a key, you could get back in.
Yeah. That's a whole
all
other
right,
traumatic
yeah.
story. Yeah, exactly.
How fast did they turn your room into a sewing room or something?
Oh, yeah. I helped move my bed out before I left for college. Is how that worked. Just so you know. No, when I was a kid, everybody left their doors open. When I was a kid, and I mean, you know, 8, 9, 6, 4, however old I was. First, in the summer, our parents just kicked us out on the streets. Get out of the house.
Go play.
Don't come back till the sun goes down. So,
house you happened to be at lunchtime, you had lunch.
You had lunch there.
Yep.
Or if you needed to use the bathroom,
yep.
You just went in some houses and others, you knocked on the door. Nobody ever said no. Nobody locked the doors. And now, of course, that's entirely gone. And along with that is gone our privilege of speaking to you for a couple of minutes, so we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Steve Ray, Mike Oden, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 40 minutes after the hour, and my timer didn't start, so I have no idea how much time I have left. But you're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. We're Soundbites right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Michael Oden.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have a question from Mark in the Hangout. What is the best Windows emulator to use on a PowerBook? I just bought something that only has PC software loaded, Parallels, and having all kinds of problems. Antivirus?
The problem is that Apple moved away from the PowerPC products in their PowerBook in 2006. And so you're going to have to find very, very old software that's still available. There used to be a program called Virtual PC, which was a Intel emulator for PowerPC. That was discontinued and eventually purchased by Microsoft, and it forms the basis of their Windows emulator inside of Windows. So you can emulate old versions of Windows. It's unlikely you'll be able to find anything like that for a PowerBook anymore. There's oldsoftware.com and oldsoftware.net that lists some of the old software, but it's I don't think you're going to have a very, very easy time finding anything for a computer that old. Might be better to, you know, buy a $100 PC. or many times, even though a specific program is only available for Windows, you could find an equivalent program for the Mac. But you may run into the same problem with a Mac that old.
Right. Right.
You know, it's like buying a Windows 3 computer, and I need a program to run on Windows 3, and you're probably not going to find one.
And Joe, also in the Hangout, says the only one he's aware of is React OS. I'm not sure that's a Windows emulator for PowerBook, but maybe it is. And I just don't know. What if I use my MacBook, he says?
Yeah, yeah. With the MacBook, you can use Parallels or Virtual PC. I'm sorry, not Virtual PC, Parallels or VMware Fusion. Those are the big commercial VM programs. Since the MacBook is already Intel-based, you don't need an emulator. You just need a virtual machine. And there's also Sun's, what's Sun's free one? VirtualBox.
VirtualBox.
Which is a free virtual machine. You still need to buy a Windows license for those programs. The virtual machine program allows you to make a second virtual computer inside your computer that you can run a different operating system on. If you want to run Windows, you have to buy a Windows license. There is a program called Crossover, which is a Mac version of Wine. Wine is a Unix program that lets you run Windows without buying Windows. You can install and set that up on an Intel-based Mac, but it's a pain in everything you own. So Crossover is $80, and it does it all for you, and you can run Windows without buying Windows. The other VM programs are between $50 and $80. Then you also have to buy a Windows license, which is $150 for Windows 7 these days, Windows 8 now. In fact, we are slowly having trouble finding Windows 7 anymore.
Yeah, that's going to happen. If you're buying Windows 7, you're starting to have problems, so don't expect to find it by Christmas.
Looks like React is an open source operating system.
Right.
Based on Windows NT.
Right, but it's not an emulator that runs inside another operating system.
It's its own operating system.
Yeah. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Joe from Pittsford, New York. Welcome, Joe. What's up?
Yes, hi, guys. I just tried to register on the Soundbites website, and it shows me as a new user. It said it would send me a password by email, and it's about an hour since I tried to register, and I haven't received a password yet. Is that an issue on the site?
Nick's not home to send the email back.
No, no, it's not. It's not me. It should be automated. And
I thought it would be automagic. Yeah,
check your junk folder just in case. A lot of those auto returns are flagged as junk.
Yeah,
and
it's not. It's not in the junk folder.
What mail service are you using?
I'm using a Gmail.
You may have to go into the Google interface and check the junk folder there. We've seen that with Yahoo and Frontier and Time Warner. They mark things as junk before they're delivered to your mailbox. And so you have to check the online junk folder sometimes to find that.
Mm-hmm. It is not there.
Okay, the last five people who signed up were Tech Age Guy.
That's me.
There you go. So it knows you're in there. You just somehow did not get your... when I get home, I'll look into that. We find, and I'm sure this is not the case with you, we find often that people put a typo in their...
Spelling error, yeah.
That's not impossible.
So... I'll at least look into that.
I run into that with my Apple ID. I misspelled my recovery address, so I can't change anything in my Apple ID account. I know my password, but I can't change anything else because the recovery address is wrong, and I can't get the email from them.
Yep.
But yeah, Joel, TechAge at JCC. Today is the joint Apple Cider TechAge Q&A meeting.
That's right. You're
going to
be there at 3 o'clock.
Yep, about 3 o'clock, and we'll be hosting more Q&A live in person. If you want to come down to TechAge at the JCC.
Perfect.
Okay, thanks, guys. Nick, what should I do if I don't hear from you?
Email me, and I will. Because by the time I get home tonight,
Nick F. at soundbites.org?
Yeah, that'll work.
Okay,
wait,
very good.
Nick F. or just Nick?
No, Nick at soundbites or Nick at asknick.com or Nick at nickf.com or Nick at pretty much anything. Nick at rit.edu
okay,
actually will get to
me.
Thanks.
So that's what happens when you run your own servers, is you can have your own address and as short as you want.
Well, and that's just it. And we were talking about that earlier today.
So jerk at asknick.com.
Jerk at asknick.com actually would probably get to me. I don't know. I've never tried it. I understand there are 40 people out there now trying it at this very moment. I'll find out when I get home because I'm not looking at my mail right now. But we were talking about this earlier, the many people who have their email address at an internet service provider. And then they're now reluctant to change internet service providers or upgrade because they worry that they will now lose their email address. It is so ridiculously cheap nowadays to get your very own address. Even if you just get your address at gmail.com, right, some username at gmail.com, that's free.
And poor John Smith is screwed.
He's kind of screwed, but yes, he is. By this point, you're probably Smith 18,455,000,000 at gmail.com. But you can get a Gmail address. It is ridiculously inexpensive these days to get your own domain, particularly if you just do email on it. So if you can get your name or some function of your name, you can get your name. They've taken out every last name on earth. So I could pay to have Nick at Francesco.com. But I got AskNick.com. I got NickF.com. I missed Nick.com by one day. I went to register, and it had been registered the day before by Nickelodeon. I was so...
Ooh.
Angry. I was
angry.
How much would you have charged them?
Exactly.
Viacom wants my name? Okay, that's $3 million.
Yeah, exactly. And I did. I missed it by a day. I was just, it is what it is. If you get that, you can set up your own email accounts. If you don't want to set up your own email accounts, you can set it up on Gmail and have your address point to that, your domain point to Gmail, and it's really fairly easy to do. There are all kinds of folks around, including I shouldn't name anybody because then I can't name everybody. So that's the way that works. It's our friend Jason from Pottsville, PA. Is that right?
No, Altoona, PA.
Altoona, PA. What can we do for you, Jason?
Real quick, I was wondering if you had heard about the new remote Chrome remote desktop from Google.
The remote Chrome desktop. Is this the add-in to the Chrome operating system?
No, it's an add-in for your Chrome browser. It basically replaces the functionality of the remote desktop system from Windows.
Yeah.
It's so easy to set up. The hardest part is typing in remote desktop in the Chrome App Store to get it.
Yep. I do know what you're talking about. What it does is it even works on Chromebooks, so that if, for example, you've bought a Chromebook for your parents, that you can do the very little tech support that would even be required on a Chromebook, but you can do it on a desktop or a laptop as well, as long as you're using the Chrome OS. It works really, really well, and it's awful nice. They're having a party in Altoona.
Sorry about that.
That's okay.
Computers, gotta love them, you know.
You got? No, you don't have to. Yeah, maybe you do. I have used the Chrome remote desktop to go to Windows machines at work and at home, and I like it a lot. It's fast, it's easy, and it works like a dream.
It's really great for remote tech support to parents, usually for us.
Yep. Well, thank you, Jason, and have fun at that party down in Altoona. Well, that's it. We're done for another week. You've wasted 2 hours of your life with this. Go out in what's left of the sunshine and enjoy the rest of your day. I'm going to go home and relax. And you know what I'm going to do while I'm relaxing? I'm going to listen to the best German music you will ever hear, because George is coming in to do that. But we're done for another week. I want to thank Michael Oden, who did a magnificent job with producing this show. I want to thank Steve Ray, who sat to my right for two solid hours. I'm Nick Francesco. You've been listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. We are Soundbites, and we are right here on the truly great and truly member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you next week.